like I'm longing to live. I wish I could do all the things that I can do, though I'm way overdue. I'd be starting anew. Well,
greetings, I'm Chuck Foster. Join me at 2 p.m. Sundays for Reggae Central, playing ska, rock steady, roots, dub, and dancehall. New releases, old favorites, and delightful obscurities right here on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A.
This is Fiercely Independent, KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara.
This is the Cal State LA Community News Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM. The show covers news and public issues about areas our students come from, including South and East Los Angeles. I'm Julie Patel-Liss, head of journalism at Cal State LA. On today's show, we'll hear about the lasting, long-term impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic on teachers and students. Then I have a personal story for you about my dad, a retired cabbie in Vegas, who died last month. We'll also get post-election updates from my UT community news class and more. But first, here's our University Times managing editor, Jackson Tamariello, with a story about how the pandemic inalterably affected education. He did this piece for our podcasting course, taught this semester by Professor Julian Reyes.
My name is Jackson Tamariello, and this is the Progress Report, a podcast looking at the state of our education system, the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic through the stories of teachers and students. What did they go through? And where do we go from here? In today's episode, I visited a classroom at Normandy Avenue Elementary School in South Los Angeles. My guest is Alma Sid, a fourth grade teacher who has been teaching at Normandy for 8 years. You said you've been teaching for about 8 years. So could you tell me what it was like in the classroom prior to the pandemic?
Okay, so before the pandemic, we still had to follow expectations and protocols, and the kids were much more aware of those protocols and expectations. They used to follow instructions with one or two reminders. They used to be well-behaved to a certain degree with, you know, not as much consequences or as much reminders. But as soon as the pandemic hit and we had to go online and then they came back, it was much more challenging just because the kids were more distracted. They don't really follow instructions. They have this, persona of getting things done quickly. They're always thinking of something more. Just the distractfulness is noticeable.
Could you like describe to me what it was like near the very beginning of the pandemic where the schools were starting to shut down and teachers and students got notice that they would have to be at home instead?
It was very challenging. Just first of all, understanding what was going on and accepting what was going on and that our day-to-day routine was going to change. I remember I was teaching fifth grade. And so our school runs up to fifth grade. And it was, of course, March. And we were getting ready for culmination. And so even that had to change. And so the kids getting in touch with the parents, you know, getting communication across with the students, informing them of a new way of teaching them so that the school year wouldn't be lost to a comment to a certain point. It was very challenging.
What was the mood like? What was the general just feeling from the teachers and the students? Was there dread? Was there sadness? Was there anger? Do you remember?
I think it was a combination of uneasiness and dread. Like, we didn't know what to expect. We didn't know how to go about, because of, you know, student situations at home, our own personal situations at home, that all of a sudden our homes became a school site or like a classroom. Even for some parents, they had to, I remember parents telling me, you know, I can't really do this right now because I work full time or I'm a single mom, or, and they had to accommodate for their kids to be at home too. So it was a lot of anxiety, a lot of uneasiness, a lot of anger to a certain point, because things had to change and we're not used to change. Or if those of us who are used to change, it was also challenging.
Was there like a lack of connection to the kids as you were teaching?
Yes. Yes.
How'd that make you feel?
With that set of students, I had already built that rapport. So they already knew who I was, how I was. I already knew how they were, you know, their likes, dislikes. So that year, that classroom, those students, we were able to reconnect to a certain point. And I felt their anxiety more, their sadness more, because they couldn't be next to their friends, next to, you know, us as teachers. And so that first year was... It was sad. I remember the last video call we did, they were all very sentimental. They were crying. They didn't know how to cope with the feeling of, you know, this is our last year here at this school and we have to do it this way. But then the following year, it was more impersonal. It was more, yeah, like, you're my teacher and yeah, you're my students, even though you would do so many different games or activities to connect with them, it was not the same. We're used to being in person, you know, face-to-face communication, you know, getting the feeling of how you are responding bodily wise. Like, if you're feeling sad, you show it and you are able to see it. But if you're behind the screen and you're saying you're sad, there's no way I can measure your feelings and how I can reassure you.
So after, I think it was in 2021, school started to shift to a hybrid setting. Mm-hmm. What was that like?
Oh my goodness.
You're giving me a look.
Oh my goodness. Because, like, I'm telling you, as I'm retelling what was going on, it was stressful on its own again. We had to learn different protocols of how to get to know the kids again. Knowing the, you know, the 6 feet apart, teaching those to the students, having signs all around the school, you know, reminding the students, keep your mask on and don't get too close. You're not able to share this. You're not able to do this. And it was a lot of no, don't. And so the kids were, I felt they felt boxed in, even though they were here at school, they felt boxed in, that they couldn't be themselves. And it was just so stale. If we were having fun conversations, you wouldn't really hear them, or like, they, because they got used to being behind the screen. And I remember a student, I guess, he got so used to being behind the screen and doing his own little thing that when I was teaching here in person with them, he was doing his own little things, like if he was in front of the screen. And so that was really funny to see how those habits, he was trying to apply them here. But his wake up call was when I said, hey, can you please stop doing that? And he just looked at me like in shock, like, yes, I'm here in person and I'm telling you, please stop doing what you're doing. So it was a challenge on its own.
I've heard and talked to some educators that kind of describe a lot of the students as kind of being several years behind developmentally. Does that ring a bell to
yes,
you?
Yes, yes. So currently, the students that I have now were probably in kinder when they had that pandemic teaching. So they missed a lot of the basic, you know, oral teachings. And usually in kinder and first, they get the most important learning outcomes, and they are behind with their reading. Even their math skills are behind. Their social skills have improved a little bit, but you could see the difference.
So like fourth graders now, they're kind of like second graders in mind, in a way.
Yeah, you hit it on the now. Yeah, yeah.
Has there been anything you've been trying to do in the classroom to keep yourself and your students positive?
Yes. We usually do SEL, which is social emotional learning, in the morning. So we discuss a lot of questions and I try to have them answer. I usually have a morning circle. We get together in the morning and I ask a question and then we answer it. So I try to give them the space to share. I'm also available one-on-one whenever we're like walking down to the lunch area, recess, any place. And if there's a serious problem, you know, they could just write on a sticky note and let me know and we can discuss it ASAP. If it's so serious, but I always try to have, you know, conversations based on building relationships. I try to include a lot of those little lessons here and there, even within the content, as brain breaks, as, you know, little stopping points within the lesson. Whenever I see that they're not focusing, okay, I'm like, okay, we have to stop. Okay, let's do the 2-minute break. We're going to do this. Or I even have their personal choice. I consider myself as an educator that likes student input with whatever I do, because essentially it's their classroom and I'm just there to guide them as much as I can. And so, you know, just giving them the freedom.
Well, Alma, thank you very much for talking with me.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share about my experiences.
That was Jackson Tamariello. I often tell my students about my mom's journey, from working on the factory floor and moving up to the office, and how much that inspired me to pursue my own passions and career. I rarely talk about my dad, Vinod Bhatrabhai Patel, a retired cabbie in Vegas who died last month at age 77. I remember meeting up with him about once a week after the divorce, and staying with him in what could only be described now as a Fleabag motel. It was a tiny room with one shared bathroom down the hall. I remember days spent riding around with him in his taxi cab, getting to see different parts of the city, seeing the skyscrapers. It seemed he always got better tips with me in the front seat. And then, within a year of the divorce, he moved, abruptly, to New York City. The next summer, he asked if I'd like to spend the summer with him. The problem was my grandparents had already planned to bring me to India for my aunt's wedding, so I said no. That upset him, and I didn't see or hear from him for the next few years. When I was in junior high, he had moved to Vegas and invited me to spend the summer with him. So I did. One summer, I even brought a friend with me. I have fond memories of those summers. He taught me how to play tennis, and that's why I played in high school. He taught me how to cook, how to make a mean chicken curry, and a healthy version of Gajra Nahalvo, an Indian dessert made with carrots. My friend Natalie was aghast at his living conditions in a small one-bedroom apartment. It was in a motel-like building near the Stratosphere, a rundown area at the time. But even she got used to eating Crisco sandwiches or whatever odd meals he gave us, as long as she had her Evian water or Diet Coke with it. Since moving to California 7 years ago, I have dragged my kids and husband Seth to Vegas at least once a year to visit my dad. I knew our time was limited because of his age, so I wanted to make sure I spent time with him and that my kids could get to know him a little. Most of our visits were rushed, taking my kids to Circus Circus's indoor theme park or having lunch somewhere near his place with my much younger half-brother and half-sister. But last summer, I let loose with questions that had haunted me for years. Why did he and my mom send me to live with my grandparents in India for the first few years of my life? Why did he leave Chicago for New York after the divorce? Here's my dad, in his own words, just over a year ago.
As far as I remember, we both agreed that Julie should go over there. And Julie, her grandfather, was very fond of her. And Julie was also very fond of her grandfather and other all other people living over there. And we always wanted Julie back here. And so we only let her live over there for 3 years. And then she came back.
And this is what he said about moving to New York.
What happened was, from Chicago, I lost my job. And I gave my cab to somebody else to park somebody else's home, to park. And when I was away, he drove the cab and he got caught. And they took my chauffeur license away. So I couldn't drive the taxi over there anymore. So I went to upstate New York. The town name was Poughkeepsie, where my youngest brother lived over there and my eldest brother lived over there.
I don't know what I expected, but his answers were reasonable. The exercise reminded me why I love my chosen profession, journalism and teaching, so much. They give you a chance to ask questions and to learn and to see things differently than you previously did. My students and I have been talking recently about a term, stereotype, coined by Walter Lippmann, who wrote a canonical book in our industry called Public Opinion. We talked about confirmation biases and how challenging it can be to break down our previous experiences and perceptions and see the nuance in issues. My kids once overheard my husband and I talking about my dad and how he mistreated my mom. "How could you still want to see him?" they asked. In their minds, he had become what people generally would call a deadbeat dad. But his answers to the questions I posed, layered on top of all the other information I have about him, helped me in recent years to see him in a new light. For one thing, we always talked about politics. He was a lifelong Democrat. I remember his outrage about issues like how my brother didn't seem to learn much in some of his high school classes, and how his grade was changed to a C just so he could stay on the football team. My dad also wanted the for-profit chemistry program that brought him to the U.S. exposed as a scam. It's no longer in business, but he alleged that it took federal funding for students, but barely taught them anything. He said I thought I should do investigative stories about these issues, and I took it for face value. What I didn't realize is that that gave me information I needed to understand the complexities of his life. All I had to do was apply the theories I learned in school to the stories he told me, and I would see a fuller picture of him. Except I didn't. Not for a long time. It's a lot easier to understand things in distinct categories, good and bad, black and white, wrong and right, even as a gender studies major, or maybe especially as one. It's easy to get into this trap of moral self-righteousness and avoid questioning yourself or thinking more deeply about issues you think are givens or knowns. Thinking about him now, I realize he wasn't set up to succeed. Not in India, where his parents were dirt poor and had too many kids to really put time into him and guide him. And not in the U.S., where he was fired from his job as a chemist because of a sham degree he got. That's the dark side of capitalism that my students and I have talked about. The difficulty of upward mobility in a system that is so profit-oriented. I always thought it was interesting and cool how much he embraced being a cabbie. And at the same time, how informed and political he was. To me, there was contradiction in that. The ultimate blue-collar, mustache guy with his iconic trucker hat who loved football, beer, and fast food. That contrasted with his keen interest and knowledge of public policy, his love of lifelong learning. But now I realize those two aspects of him likely fed each other. His awareness of inequities he faced may have actually led him to embrace his blue-collar lifestyle.
I grew up in a very extremely poor conditions. We didn't have electricity at home. And all my study came with a lantern. At nighttime, I used to use lantern. We had a two-room apartment, and we were five brothers, one sister, and a father and mother. So that many people, we live in a two-room apartment. And at that time, our rent was 11 rupees a month, which is in today's exchange rate, it's about a quarter, 25 cents a month. I was happy, but otherwise I did not learn rights and wrongs of the life. Nobody bothered to teach me, and nobody had a time, because we are five brothers and one sister. So we are very crowded family. I was a very shy kid when I was growing up. But last 2 years of my high school, I decided that I want to go to America. So I really, really worked hard, and I got A grades, and that's how I got the admission in the school.
Dad says he didn't learn much at the school. It was more of a degree mill that wanted to graduate a lot of students to qualify for government funds.
I had to do all the art jobs, and then I drove taxi cab for 35 years, 9 years in Chicago, and 27 years in Las Vegas. And I had to talk to people, and I learned a lot from the people who sits in my cab. And all I had to do is listen when they talk. And I learned a lot.
He used some of that knowledge the past few years to draft a book that quizzes readers on politics, science, history, and other subjects.
Now I keep myself very busy writing my book, and I have a really good time writing my book. I'm blessed to have wonderful kids, Julie and the other two kids, and Michelle, and the other one is Richard. And now I'm very, very happy. I live a very quiet life. And that's where I am.
The last time I saw my dad was at my brother's wedding in late October. He almost left without saying goodbye. When I saw that he wasn't at his seat, I ran to the hallway and got him in time. I said bye, gave him a hug, and he said, "I love you, Julie." You are listening to the Cal State LA Community News Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM. I'm Julie Patel-Liss. After the break, we'll get some post-election updates from editors and reporters in my University Times Community News class. Stay with us.
KPFK for our end-of-year fun drive, which starts on Giving Tuesday, December 3rd at midnight with Something's Happening. Giving Tuesday is a global generosity movement, unleashing the power of people and organizations to transform their communities and the world. Join us and be part of the KPFK family as exciting new things are in store this holiday season and in the coming year. Start early by calling 818-985-5735, press option 2, and donate to People Powered Radio. Maya Angelou said, "I've found that among its other benefits, giving liberates the soul of the giver." We are KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles and online for the world at kpfk.org.
We are back to the Cal State LA Community News Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM. I'm Tupac Zapata, an audio editor for the University Times Community News Outlet. Donald Trump has been elected as the 47th President of the United States, securing a clear victory over Democratic Vice President Kamala Harris. The Republicans also won 218 seats, taking control of the U.S. House. That's according to the Associated Press. That means Donald J. Trump and the Republican Party will have control of the three key branches of government, the presidency, the House, and the Senate, at least for 2 more years. Some voters are thankful, looking forward to tighter immigration policies. Others are worried about little to no access to basic human rights. Experts say people can become more active in their communities at the local and state levels to address concerns and make changes. They can reach out to their elected officials in Congress and state legislators, as well as local county and city leaders, to weigh in about issues they care about most, or attend meetings to hear what their city or neighborhood council member, county supervisors, and school board members are up to. On today's show, we'll hear about election issues from some of our UT Community News Class reporters. They covered statewide and local ballot measures for our voter guide and local news outlets Boyle Heights Beat, Kalo News, and this show. Now they're bringing us their follow-ups on their measures they covered. Did they pass? Were they shot down? And what does that mean for you, our listeners? Credit goes to my colleague Ashley Romero for covering our voting primer, cross-published both on Boyle Heights Beat and Kalo News' website, and writing part of this show's intro. Her story and the others can be found at csulauniversitytimes.com/2024voterguide and at boyleheightsbeat.com. Our first story is a post-election update from Emmanuel Martinez Melendez, who covered State Proposition 2 to improve K-12 and community college facilities. His original voter guide story about the measure also ran in Boyle Heights Beat.
California schools will be getting more money for upgrades soon. State residents approved Proposition 2, a measure that would authorize $10 billion in bonds for repairing, upgrading, and constructing facilities at K-12 public schools and community colleges. It was passed by 58% of California voters. That's according to the California Secretary of State's website. Some residents are thankful because many of their school facilities require repair. Others are worried about the debt this could put taxpayers in and how the money will be spent. Experts say residents can rest assured for now, as bonds do not directly raise taxes to address economic concerns they may have. Students, parents, and teachers who want to weigh in on what repairs are needed should contact their local school districts or attend school board meetings. For UT Community News, this is Emmanuel Martinez reporting from Cal State LA.
Now let's turn to climate change, something that's already starting to affect our weather and migration patterns. Social media editor Giselle Mauricio covered State Proposition 4 to invest $10 billion to fight climate change. Here's her update.
Voters care about the environment and want the state to do something about it. That's one of the takeaways from this November's election. Voters approved a statewide measure to invest $10 billion from the state general funds to combat climate change by a 59.3% vote. That's according to the California Secretary of State website. The passing of the measures means local governments will be incentivized to invest in natural resources and climate activities, and it will likely reduce state and local government costs for responding to and recovering from climate disasters. At the same time, once implemented, the new law will cost the state about $400 million annually for 40 years in order to repay the bond. While some residents are worried about these costs, others say they're necessary, a reality to ensure a better future. Local residents who want to weigh in about some of this money spending should contact their lawmakers at the state and local levels. For UT Community News, this is Giselle Mauricio reporting from East Los Angeles.
Affordable housing is another issue on a lot of our minds. University Times Community News reporter Leslie Hudson covered a related measure, State Proposition 5, and has the latest on it.
It seems California voters shot down a statewide measure that would have lowered the voting requirement needed to allow local governments in California to borrow money for infrastructure and to provide assistance with low-income housing. Proposition 5 would have lowered the votes required from 2/3 to 55%, while requiring local governments to do annual audits on what is spent and allow oversight from independent committees. But unofficial results as of November 14th show the measure was rejected by 55.4% of voters. That's according to the California Secretary of State's website. Some residents are thankful because they believe the measure would have been too costly and could have resulted in higher taxes for other homeowners. Others are worried about how the defeat of this measure will impact infrastructure and housing needed quickly for seniors, people with disabilities, and others. Experts say residents can contact their local leaders to advocate for new solutions to find other funds for infrastructure and affording housing. For UT Community News, this is Leslie Hudson reporting from Los Angeles.
With the economy being top of mind, we all knew that a proposed minimum wage increase could have major impacts on the state's economy. Reporter Jessica Galan covered that issue, State Proposition 32, for us and Boyle Heights Beat. She has this update.
The election results are too close to call for Proposition 32. The California Secretary of State's unofficial results say 50.9% of voters rejected it, but the vote count won't be certified until December 13th. And experts say it's within 2 percentage points, so it can't be called yet. The measure would have increased California's minimum wage by $1 beginning in 2026. Some residents are thankful because they feared it would only worsen California's deficit, and small business owners were worried about increased expenses. Supporters still hope it passes to improve the cost of living and give people more spending money to boost the economy. Experts say residents can't connect with local legislators or attend government meetings if they are concerned about California's budget deficit or current cost of living. For UT Community News, this is Jessica Galan reporting from Cal State LA.
Now, for one of the more confusing measures on the ballot, our copy editor, Thomas Davila, tells us about State Proposition 34.
The election results are too close to call for Proposition 34. The California Secretary of State's unofficial results say 50.8% of voters approved it, but the vote count won't be certified until December 13th. And experts say it's within 2 percentage points, so it can't be called yet. The measure would limit how certain healthcare providers spend money from a federally funded prescription drug program. It would specifically require them to spend the money on direct patient care. This applies to major nonprofit organizations like the AIDS Healthcare Foundation and requires all state agencies to negotiate for cheaper prices for their medications. Residents supporting the measure want to see a stop to the abuse of the 340B program by nonprofits that operate substandard low-income housing. Others are worried that Prop 34 effectively weaponizes the state's citizen initiative process to punish AHF. For now, we can all just wait and see what happens. Once we know the result, residents can still weigh in by contacting their local newspaper or their state and local elected officials with what they think about public issues related to healthcare and nonprofit expenses. For UT Community News, this is Thomas Davila reporting from the city of Rosemead.
Kalo News ran four of the class's voter guide stories this semester, including coverage of three local East Side measures. The first one, by reporter Jose Cabrera, covered the city of El Monte's sales tax measure EM to fund key city services and programs. Here's Jose's update about that measure.
El Monte City Measure EM would help improve El Monte infrastructure while providing senior and youth programs was approved by 55% of the voters. That's according to the County of Los Angeles election results website. That means that city sales tax would increase 0.75% until $3.5 million is raised annually. Some of the residents are thankful that the city will finally be addressing the issues that has wreaked havoc on drivers while providing care resources for those in need. Others worry that the tax increase is going to affect residents financially. Experts say residents can expect more city revenue to address homelessness concerns they might have. For UT Community News, this is Jose Cabrera reporting from El Monte, California.
Another measure in El Monte comes from its school district. University Times' community news reporter Kara Alexander covered General Bond Measure ME to improve district facilities and improve school safeties for Kalo News. Here is her story.
El Monte City School District Measure ME, approved by 62% of voters, will provide funding for elementary schools in El Monte to support classroom repairs, improve green spaces, and enhance school safety. That's according to ballotpedia.org. This measure authorizes the district to issue $105 million in bonds with the revenue dedicated to these school improvements. To fund the measure, property owners will face an estimated tax levy of $30 per $100,000 in assessed property value. Some residents are grateful that funding will finally be available to upgrade outdated school buildings and classrooms, providing improved facilities for children. Others, however, feel that the funding should prioritize hiring more qualified teachers and increasing student diversity rather than focusing on infrastructure. Still, others are worried about the tax increase because of other costs they face, including inflation. Parents, students, and teachers who want to weigh in on what should be done with the funds should contact the district or attend a school board meeting. For UT Community News, this is Cara Alexander reporting from El Monte.
A few miles away in Monterey Park, the city was considering changing its business license tax rates. University Times Community News Editor-in-Chief Queen Anduong covered that for Kalo News and has this post-election update.
A week has passed since Election Day. A Monterey Park measure that will increase certain business taxes was passed by 71% of voters in the city. This information is according to the Los Angeles County Clerk's website. This means that large retailers and doctor's office will have to pay more, while some small businesses like restaurants could see a decrease or no effect. Some residents are thankful because there will be more money for general city services, like rural maintenance or even new housing projects. Other people might be worried about businesses leaving the area to other cities that might have cheaper business taxes and even increasing prices for some consumers. After seeing the impact of this tax increase in the next year or so, businesses and residents can contact city council members to let them know how they feel. From UT Community News, this is Queen Aduong reporting from Monterey Park.
After the economy, immigration was the biggest issue according to many exit polls after the election. It is an issue that is very close to my heart, as most of my family living in the U.S. are immigrants like myself. I was a 9-year-old boy when I entered this country, and I have called it my home for the last 32 years. When I heard conspiracies of undocumented migrant caravans being allowed in to vote a certain way, I realized how disinformation can be used to turn poor and vulnerable people into some form of boogeyman. I personally have never voted in my life, but over the summer, my dream of one day casting a vote became closer to a reality when I became a U.S. green card holder after 3 decades of living in Los Angeles, and in a few years, I will be eligible to apply for U.S. citizenship and eventually naturalize. Obtaining a legal status in this country is the best thing that can happen to an immigrant who loves this country. It has been almost 40 years since the Immigration Reform and Control Act of 1986, which lifted about 3 million people from the shadows and granted them legal status. Today, polarization through disinformation has many immigrant communities in fear of mass deportations and family separations. As a journalist, I will do my best to raise awareness and give a platform to those who are marginalized. You are listening to the Cal State LA Community News Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM. I'm Tupac Zapata. Up next, a Cal State LA alum is using his skills to help students in California prisons express themselves.
Thinking about donating your unwanted car, truck, or boat? Why not donate it to KPFK? It's a tax deductible, and it helps keep all your favorite programs on air. Call our representatives by dialing 1-877-KPFK-AUTO. 1-877-KPFK-AUTO. We'll take care of all the paperwork and give you a receipt for your tax deductible contribution.
The Pacifica mission statement
is to establish a foundation
organized and operated exclusively for educational purposes,
to encourage and supply outlets for the creative skills and energies of the community,
to engage in any activity that shall contribute to a lasting understanding between nations and between the individuals of all nations, races, creeds, and color,
to gather and disseminate information on the causes of conflict between any and all of such groups,
to promote the study of political and economic problems and of the causes of religious, philosophical, and racial antagonisms,
to promote the full distribution of public information, to obtain access to sources of news not commonly brought together,
and to employ such varied sources in the public presentation of accurate, objective, comprehensive news on all matters
vitally affecting the community.
The Pacifica Mission Statement.
We are back to the Cal State LA Community News Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM. I'm April Brown. Next, we'll tell you how one incarcerated man has just created an audiobook to tell his story. There will be a description of self-harm that may not be appropriate for all listeners. You may not know it, but Cal State LA has a prison graduation initiative, giving incarcerated men and women the chance to be students again. They can also potentially earn a bachelor's degree inside. At the Calipatria State Prison near the Salton Sea, faculty and staff support a narrative therapy media program. Ray Edardetto, who helps run it, explains what it is.
It's simply just kind of retelling your story and then imagining yourself in a different light. You know, it's like we kind of are the stories we tell ourselves. So it's a lot of it's just getting to who people really are, talking about growing up, talking about, traumas, things like that, to where you're making this connection inside the class with other people and hearing their stories and realizing, okay, no one's really different.
Ray is a producer of the program's podcast called Words Uncaged. 32-year-old Lamont Kellum Jr. is one of the incarcerated men involved.
Originally, I've always written poems, but I've never shared them. So I started writing poems when I was about 11, maybe. And it was just a way for me to express myself because I was kind of closed in, so I didn't really want to talk about it. So I write it, and then once I write it, I felt like I got it out, and then I get rid of it or whatever because I didn't really want anybody to know how I really felt.
Lamont never really considered doing much with his poems until two things happened. The first thing, He shared his work with an old cellmate.
He kind of read what I wrote on his own, and then it affected him in a certain way. And I didn't look at it like, I'm like, okay, this is different. So when I actually gained the time, the way that I wrote it, and I had on him telling Ivy, and he was like, man, like, I feel like everybody needs to hear this.
The second thing, he met Ray Anardetto.
Another student I had in the class, this guy Eric, who had been with me probably like a year and a half. He was a brilliant writer, older guy. And he kept saying, I have this young dude, I'm trying to get him in the class. I'm trying to get him in the class. And he's a brilliant writer and blah, blah, blah. He's innocent and all this stuff. And finally, Lamont came in. We got him on the list. And I think he read some of his work or gave me some of his work along with his book. And I was like, wow, this dude is brilliant, you know, in terms of writing and just his outlook on life and, you know, the way he puts words together is super interesting and just different and unique. And there's he's a real artist.
This artist has been behind bars for nearly 9 years. Lamont is serving a life sentence for one murder and two attempted murders he says he did not commit. The Compton Innocence Initiative, the Los Angeles Innocence Project, and the Cal State LA California Forensic Science Institute are working to overturn what they believe is his wrongful conviction. Lamont, though, has not been idle while he's been inside. He's written two books, including one for children. But he's now taken his spoken word poems one step further with an audiobook under the name King Cholo. That's Cholo with two C's.
Once people hear what I might, rather than read it, it gives a different type of feel.
Here's the introduction, called Cholo Gang, followed by the title track, A Heart Finally Open.
Urban CalLink, you have a prepaid call from
King Cholo,
an inmate at the Calipatria State Prison, Calipatria, California. To accept this call, say or dial 5 now.
A Heart Finally Open.
I was 14 when I contemplated suicide. It wasn't because I couldn't handle life, but because I didn't think it was rude I should have died that night. I questioned God on why he kept me alive, and thinking I had a purpose was the furthest thing from my mind. I didn't think pills were a noose. I had a gun and loaded the gun, but couldn't shoot. Locked in a bathroom, hurting, and still, I couldn't shoot. First person popped in my mind was Duka, and I then knew leaving her alone in this world just wasn't cool.
Yeah, decision for this audiobook and putting him with Griff Schneider was I thought they'd be just really an interesting combo, you know, like Griff is like an indie rock musician.
This is a really unique project and I was really, really excited.
Los Angeles musician Griff Schneider was intrigued by the possibilities.
He called me one day and he asked, you know, if I would have interest in basically putting music to poems. And it was not like an album, though. Like, he was like, it's not an album, it's an audiobook. So it's like, so they wanted it not to be like songs, you know. When I think of a poem, I'm like, well, you could easily format that to being like a song, you know. And but no, it was scored. They wanted it to be kind of like scored, like a kind of almost like more cinematically.
For Lamont, the collaboration was both unusual and meaningful.
Being here, it's not, a lot of people don't take the voices behind these walls serious. So it takes for a person to really like look past the situation and the circumstances to say, like, I will still work with you. I will still do this with you. And that's what was done by Griff. It was one of them things like, despite that situation, you have a story to tell. So let's figure out a way for you to tell it and for me to assist you with telling it and help you.
The whole process took about 3 months to do. I'd say the first month and a half, we were talking about what he wanted, you know, what he was imagining, and I'd kind of work up an idea based off of like a Spotify playlist.
This project was, in some ways, uniquely challenging, in part because every 10 minutes during calls with Lamont in prison, this happens.
60 seconds remaining.
When you're on the calls, like any time you would start to have like a moment, you know how conversations go, you have to build this momentum. And right as you're building momentum, right as you're going to say something, it's like, it cuts you off.
And then there's getting a good recording from Lamont.
basically we had to get audio from him recording onto his tablets and then sent.
Despite all that, they were able to make a meaningful collaboration.
It was actually interesting because it added to my image of what I wanted to do. So when you take if I'm saying all right, I want to do this and this is how I'm going to say it. And then somebody comes on and if you come on and say, okay, well, this is how I took it in. And this is something that I feel like you should do. It's knowing that he has an ear for this and a mind support, it helps me.
His recordings were so moving, though. As someone who does a lot of vocal, takes and all that, people can get really in their head. They can lose touch with what they're even trying to say. And I don't know. I just feel like for him, he didn't have that option to overwork anything he's doing. He just would read the poems and it just had this rawness, it was really compelling.
Heroism.
I used to wonder who I'd turn to when I needed saving. At times, I was in so much pain, it was a simple hug I was craving. But that ain't what Cain did. So I looked at the man in the mirror and took the pain in. Then let it roll down my face and drip off my chin. And allowed myself to hang in. Searching for solace, searching for peace, shit, searching for me. I was lost in a distant world, distant from the world, and everything was hard to see. Then I couldn't breathe. The distant air was unfamiliar. And I knew to catch my breath, I had to let go of the agony. Walk by faith, not by sight. It said that faith moved mountains, and I'm wondering if that statement is right. I need insight.
At the beginning of every track, there's a voice giving the title. It's Lamont's wife of 2 years, Sue.
He was very, he's very caring. He has a lot of things to offer. His words, him speaking, his presence. He's a very powerful person. He has the ability to change. He has a leadership ability, and a lot of people can't follow him. So he knows how to speak. He can relate to people. He knows how to talk to people. He's very inviting. He has an inviting and attracting soul. He can attract a lot of attention. I just know that he's just very powerful, and his words are very powerful. And it's just only making sense now that he's able to express and tell his story and express his feelings and the things he's gone through. I think it can change a lot for a lot of people.
Lamont and Sue have known each other since they were teenagers. After losing touch for years, they finally reconnected.
We never missed a step. We would have been talking from kids all the way until then and then got married. That's how it feels. So it was I looked at it as one of the things it was destined to go this way. It happened the way it happened for a reason.
And what's that like getting to know each other on the phone, at a distance?
I always told her that it gave us an advantage. And why? Because, it's actually getting to know each other. It's not, a momentary thing. It's not seeing each other and it gives us the time to actually sit and have conversations about a lot of different things.
Distant lovers.
Listening to the rain at the window, mind flowing and smooth and open like when wind blow. Wanting you close, craving you like dope. I need my dose. We're distant lovers. Every time I see you, my eyes light up like I'm staring into the fireplace. My heartbeat grows the closer we draw near in space. Our silhouettes meet and greet, our souls intertwine as emotions race. We're distant lovers.
Lamont says the entire process of making this audiobook was a great learning experience.
I did grow a lot because it caused me to understand the delivery part of everything. Because it's easy to write something, but it's harder to deliver it. So I can write something with a melody in my head, but then when it comes time for me to say it, I kind of just say it just to get it out the way, rather than saying it to actually work. Allow people to understand the concept of why I'm writing it in the mindset and the energy I was giving it to. So that was like a learning curve for me.
this program overall, like how did you see Lamont grow in this program and kind of since you've known him and after that, you know, what do you see in other inmates that participate?
With Lamont, it's been such a accelerated growth.
Here again, the Words Uncaged podcast producer, Ray Adornetto.
I think just from the person he was when he first walked in and then seeing like who he is now, just like a year later, just being given access to education, being given access to these programs. And he's become really serious about the programs and he's become like this leader on the yard in terms of positive program, taking all these classes and, you know, him getting exposed to more knowledge and educating himself and with his family and his, and just becoming, yeah, this different person. It's happened really quick, which is amazing. Like, you know, because you spend 10 years in prison for something you didn't do. It's like, you're thinking, I mean, most of us would be very angry, I would imagine. And, you know, and for him to kind of step up and be so determined to do positive in a negative environment, to me, that's always a big, you know, I give a lot of credit to that because I don't know if I'd be able to do that, you know, in his situation.
And this program has made it much more likely you'll hear more from Lamont Kellum Jr. or his alter ego, King Cholo, in print or in your ears.
I've never given up on myself. I may have been hard on myself. I may have, you know, evaluated myself in certain ways, but I've never given up on myself, and I always held myself to the high standard. So when you bring those two together, now the King Cholo thing is a voice, it's a persona, it's a character, it's integrity, it's rules, it's honor, it's giving you a part of me that, you know, comes with the territory. You can call me Lamont or you can call me Cholo, and I don't think both of them.
Searching for solace, searching for peace, shit, searching for me. I was lost in a distant world, distant from the world, and everything was hard to see. Then I couldn't breathe. The distant air was unfamiliar, and I knew to catch my breath, I had to let go of the agony. Walk by faith, not by sight. It said that faith moved mountains, and I'm wondering if that statement is right. I need insight.
You can find A Heart Finally Open on Spotify. Lamont Kellum Jr.'s other books are available on Amazon. You've been listening to the Cal State LA Community News Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM. The show provides news about issues affecting the undercovered areas Cal State LA students come from, including South and East Los Angeles. That's all we have for now. Our executive producers are Professors Julie Patel-Liss and me, April Brown. Our hosts for this episode were Julie Patel-Liss, Tupac Zapata, and me. UT Community News Editors this semester are Quina Dong, Cynthia Harbo, Tupac Zapata, Giselle Mauricio, Ashley Romero, Jonathan Chung, and Thomas Davila. The community news reporters are Kara Alexander, Jessica Galan, Laura Barney, Leslie Hudson, and Jeanette Guile, Jose Cabrera, Emmanuel Martinez, and Haley Mosley. The University Times managing editor, Jackson Tamariello, contributed to part one of today's show with a story from his podcasting class, which is taught by Professor Julian Reyes. Music in the first segment is by Music for Video and Universe Afield, both on Pixabay, and A Bit Advanced Music by Adobe Stock Audio. Our theme music is Contagious by Mark Vard. Special thanks to our other Cal State LA faculty and staff, Christina Hackle, Tony Cox, Joanne Lightford-Powell, Chanel Curry, Nithin Patel, Andrew Campa, Julian Reyes, Jane McKeever, Jeff Foost, and Jesus Cruz. I'm April Brown. For all of us at Cal State LA, thank you for listening.
I'm Andrew Tonkovich of KPFK's weekly literary arts show, Bibliocracy. Support this program and the station by hitting the online donations button at kpfk.org. Choose the monthly donation option and, like me, become a sustaining member all